This all started with my friend who had a sort of massive stomach problem. I took him to a primary care physician. The physician spent 4 minutes with us and said, "You got to go see a specialist." I figured, like in every other country in the world, the specialist would be right there. Not really, not here. He sent us over to his friend, who's a gastroenterologist on the Upper West Side. That person got back to us after 13 business days and said, "Hey, I spent 7 minutes with us and said, you got to go get a scan." I figured, no shit, of course we have to go get a scan. And that's how we started, right? Like, by the end of this whole situation, my friend spent 17 days trying to get a very simple scan.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Z47 Moments. I'm Ashwin, I lead our AI investments alongside Vikram, who's a founding partner at the fund. And today, we're going to be chatting with the founders of Coral AI, Ajay and Aniket. Guys, first off, welcome to the family and welcome to the podcast. They just raised $12.5 million and we led that round and we're super grateful to be partnering with the both of you. I'm going to share some very quick background about the both of you. I think this is both Ajay and Aniket's first company together, but their second rodeo. They were founding employees at an AI company prior to this, I think employee number 1 and 2. And what we loved about the both of them is, one, they've never done healthcare before, but they've approached this problem with some absolute fearlessness. And two, it does target this $1 trillion spend administrative overhead that burdens the US healthcare system. And I think they've had a very interesting take to the problem. The best healthcare AI founders are those that are new to the space and don't have any of that baggage with them. Tell us why you picked the domain. You haven't been in healthcare, you haven't seen it as deeply, but tell us why you picked healthcare and what did you see that others ignored?
Yeah, I think in this case, we just saw a problem. We had no fancy theses like how you all write about us now. We just saw a burning sort of problem. It just all started with my friend who had a sort of massive stomach problem. I took him to a primary care physician. The physician spent 4 minutes with us and said, "You got to go see a specialist." I figured, like in every other country in the world, the specialist would be right there. Not really, not here. He sent us over to his friend, who's a gastroenterologist on the Upper West Side. That person got back to us after 13 business days and said, "Hey, I spent 7 minutes with us and said, you got to go get a scan." And I figured, no shit, of course we have to go get a scan. And that's how we started, right? Like, by the end of this whole situation, my friend spent 17 days trying to get a very simple scan. He got so annoyed, he took a trip all the way back to India, saw a doctor, got a scan done, realized his gallbladder was about to burst, and then returned 4 days later. I still hadn't figured out how to get a scan. So all we saw was a big problem. It takes days and sometimes weeks to get someone the healthcare they need in the US healthcare system. We really wanted to solve that problem, and I thought it was worth spending the next 5 to 10 years of our life solving. So that's how we started. No thesis, sort of fancy, thought process behind it. It was just a big problem that had to be solved. And what's the best and most efficient way to solve this is kind of where we came from. That's how we thought about it.
So all the founders that we back usually have a founding story. And I remember yours as being one of the most amazing one that I'd heard, that you got on a plane, went to the US, no return ticket, and then started just sort of pounding on doors and going into all of these healthcare systems, and in fact became an intern somewhere to try and figure out this problem. And I don't know how many cities in how many days, but it seemed like a lot to me in a short period of time. So just talk through that initial journey.
Yeah, like I said, we're not from enterprise software, not from healthcare. And these problems aren't visible to people who are sitting at home, right? The only way to to figure out and solve the problem for yourself is to actually go in person, walk in there, and then ask them, hey, can you show me what your process currently looks like? So you mentioned the travel. We did probably 17 cities in 30 days when we got started. Literally going to all parts of the US, understanding problems in each state, in each type of vertical of healthcare. We did infusion, pharmacy, health systems, a lot of like primary care. So we sort of toured the entire US healthcare system. It felt like for multiple months before we understood the problem in depth, right? So the only way to solve the problem is if you could know it better than anybody else in the world. That's sort of where Aniket and I came from, and that's what we did. We spent a lot of time really doing the work ourselves, honestly, for us to be able to understand how do you build a product that can solve that problem.
Yeah. So, one of the things that I remember Ashish Singh, and Ashish is this consultant from Bain, an institution himself. He said, you got him out of retirement to come and work. And I asked him what convinced him to start working for you. It was just that you were just so relentless. And I know you love Kobe for his Mamba mentality. And I'm sure you're wearing a T-shirt that says Mamba on it, and very predictable. So what does that Mamba mentality mean to you? And how do you get that ethos into your company and your founder partnership?
Yeah, I mean, in Ashish's just a side joke here. In Ashish's case, I think we just annoyed him by calling him too many times. That's kind of how we got him on board. But jokes aside, I think for us it was just there's a problem to be solved. There's an incredible, massive challenge in the U.S. healthcare system, and the way we wanted to lead our lives going into this. So my younger brother actually was my inspiration when we both started. He went through 4 to 5 brain surgeries. We were in the ICU for multiple months. And you go through different stages of grief. And the last one, which I learned from him, was we don't cower to anything or anyone, which is the Mamba mentality in a nutshell. And I think we said we're going to live our lives a certain way. I think the inspiration for us when we got started was if he could get past his problems, we can get past the smaller problem, which is the U.S. healthcare system's paper pyramid. So I think in our case, that's where we came from. We've probably been through more hell, it feels like, that some of these other problems and sort of effort that we have to put into to crack a problem don't seem like big problems at all, right? Like I don't know if that answers your question.
And you were right when you said this isn't a problem that folks sitting at home would ever see. And it is something that really pains the US healthcare system. So give us a sense, like when a patient gets referred to a specialist in the US healthcare system, what happens, and walk us through that process of that 50 page docket, the 8 odd people that end up touching it.
Yeah. So when you go to primary care, so first, to answer your first question, people haven't seen the problem, but they've experienced it, right? The two can be two at the same time. They just don't know what goes behind sort of the black box that is the messy intricacies of the U.S. healthcare system. But typically, for all people who go into primary care every day, maybe 40% get referred out. This referral form, which is 95% of that happens by the fax machine, even in 2026. In fact, Fun story here. I don't think Aniket and I had ever seen a fax machine in our lives before this. But you get referred out. These are, we get regularly through our platform 862 page long faxes with 22 patients, where you might see Aniket, Ajay, Ashwin, and Aniket, Ajay, Ashwin, like all sort of split and have to be split, tagged, merged, all of that before you can actually understand all the notes for a particular patient, right? So that's how it gets started. About 50% of the time, you might see that the information being sent over is insufficient. So you have to contact the patient, you have to contact another health system to actually get the right information. And that kickstarts the process of one, how do you get a patient scheduled, and two, how do you get paid, for that particular patient. Right. So I think that's what the process looks like. These are long faxes with doctor's handwriting, checkboxes, signatures. You might see a checkbox with like a tick or like it's a slash that denotes that we've checked all the boxes. You might see sort of handwriting on top of printed text where they've crossed it out and then corrected it separately. And that's sort of what the reality of a lot of these practices are. You get thousands and thousands of patients via your inbox. Thousands of formats, which there's no standardized format in how you can send out a patient referral, and extremely painful to sort of go through. And you have to hire tons and tons of staff members who literally are just going into the inbox and reading emails, right? Or faxes in this case. And that's sort of the problem that we noticed.
And how did you guys approach that solution?
Anikin, do you want to answer some questions too? Like,
I'm saving all the hard questions for Anikin.
Okay, cool. I'll answer this. I think in this case, if you look at like a provider in 2026, you have insurance companies that are looking to deny in some sense. You have these referring providers who are giving you these packets of information that might or might not be correct or full, like complete. A lot of this is like a checklist. You have EMR or ERP systems that whose incentive is to increase the amount that you sort of spend on them. So in this case, you know, the idea is like very, very simple. How do you consolidate this entire process into one platform? There are 10 to 12 different teams on 10 different tools. So one, how do you combine all of that into one inbox where we automatically feed that, understand it. We know how to split a patient. We know how to merge different patients' documentation that come at a certain amount of time. We build a patient file for our customers, for each patient. Then we automate a lot of the workflows where we have to communicate back and forth. We run benefits investigations. Those could happen via 5 to 6 different types of ways. You have to qualify patients on thousands of guidelines in each state. Think of this like a great perplexity style citation tool, and so on and so forth, right? That's what kickstarts sort of how do you get a patient, how do you get paid for a particular patient that you're already seeing. So, like I said, 10 different teams, 10 different tools, one platform that unifies all of this. That's sort of been how we approach the problem.
So okay. I'll give you a few observations for and what really ticks a lot of boxes for us. One is incredibly young founders, fearless. But then they just went at immersing themselves in the problem in a very short period of time. And like Ajay said, doing the work for a long period of time. And then because they didn't have the baggage, they just approached this problem with an incredibly fresh pair of eyes. But for me, the one thing that stood out is with AI, you're actually not changing the way anybody is working in that healthcare system. And overall, healthcare professionals are super busy. They don't want to do all of this admin work, which is around the work, and this just works in their existing workflow. And I think that worked really well for them. To make all of this possible, there's a pretty insane technology problem to be solved, and that's where Aniket comes in. And Aniket, talk about, you know, what does it take for these workflows for the work to actually happen? And I know when you first started, you were at 80-85% accuracy, but now in production, I'm forgetting what the latest number is, but 97-98% accuracy. What's the technology problem like, and how do you get to that kind of accuracy?
Yeah, I'll answer two parts to your first question. It's a lot of context building. So you have to figure out, let's say you get your faxes, figure out the context from these faxes for each patient. You may get faxes on different days, even weeks apart for the same, let's say Aniket got a fax today, then he got a fax 1 week later. You have to combine that context. And you also have to capture context from external systems, maybe like EMR systems, say like Epic. You have to get the context from there. Context is important to get the full picture of how to process this patient as quickly as possible without missing any key information points. And our aim was to orchestrate all of these functionalities into one single platform, get the faxes, have top of the line AI models, which are building context on these, build the right integrations with the portals that these healthcare systems are already using, and try to make sense out of this context in a way that's easy to capture by the users of these healthcare systems. And the second question that you asked about accuracy, that's a really good question. As Ajay mentioned, there's no standard way of filling these forms. In fact, there's no standard format to these forms anyway. And we had to figure out what are the key places where information can be found in these forms. That's one. Two, we had to figure out if there are conflicts in information, like you'll have date of birth on page one as one number, but you'll have another date of birth on like page five for the same patient. That could be a mistake from a human, could be some mistake that someone had put in like 10 years ago in a healthcare system that we had captured. But it's important to build that context and find ambiguities and highlight that to the users of our platform. And third is fine-tuning all the models to the exact kind of forms that our customers use. And that's a key point here, because we have the data, and utilizing this data in a way that's more in tune with the forms our customers get, more in tune with the ambiguities they get, and also handle some of the exceptions that all these customers have. Like, for example, they'll be like, if something comes from Dr. John, always ignore the phone number that's there given by the patient, because he always inputs it wrong, right? So they have to encode this into the platform. And it took a long time to figure this one out. But once you have the system rolling, I think you have very happy customers.
So I know, Aniket, you came from Google's GenAI team. And this is the favorite VC question on why can't the big models and the big horizontals do this? Or why can't any of the incumbents, and Epic is the biggest, why can't they get to this level of accuracy in this problem?
If we think about some of the foundational model companies like OpenAI, Anthropic, they're not going to do this, A, because people don't want to give the data and they don't have the right access to these variational forms data, for example, that we have access to. That's one. Two, we also integrate with a lot of different systems and orchestrate the entire workflow on our end and encode these exceptions that the healthcare systems are riddled with. This another thing without which, even if they build the context, they don't have the full context, right? They may do parts of the facts as well, but they might not get the rest of the context, say, from Epic, right? Which we have access to, and we are building the full information for our customers. So we have tried foundational models, and the context, if I would give it a number, it would be like maybe 40% of what we could get if we integrated with all the healthcare systems. And that's a big miss for our users using Coral, because they can't process the patient accurately. Like, they might not have the insurance information, for example, because the faxes won't send it. They'll have to get it from somewhere else. And for systems like Epic, companies like Epic, they're sitting on decades of fax data, but they want to be more of a system of record. And I don't think they're really interested in building models that could make intake process faster, the kind of problem that we are solving. And they definitely don't want to integrate with other systems.
I'll answer some part of this as well. Traditional, just talking about reading documents from forms, for example, traditional OCR, which is TestRact, I guess, 55% accuracy. You use a LLM-based wrapper, as you all mentioned. OpenAI and others, 65 to 70% accuracy on our evals. And then that doesn't add any value, right? Like, here you're looking for perfection. which is for someone to look at and actually use your platform, you can't get anything wrong, right? What healthcare demands is if you have 95% accuracy, you might be able to solve some version of the problem. If you have 99% accuracy and above, that's when you really, really attack the problem very, very well. I think that's like the first thing. The second thing is splitting, which is 862-page long document with 27 patients in it, is something that traditional models are, or even LLM-based sort of wrappers, can't really solve, right? If we could solve this problem with traditional models, we would. Unfortunately, that's not that would just save us a lot of time. But unfortunately for us, that's not the case, right? Reading doctors' handwriting is not present on the web, for example, and that's kind of why we had to build a lot of these things in house.
There's an example I can add to help imagine. So a doctor's signature, it has to be a proper signature. Even if they put like a dash in the signature field, that is invalid. And you have to really know that your traditional LLM systems, OCR systems are not gonna figure that one out. They'll say the signature exists.
The largest competitor in your space has raised, I think, a north of 100 mil. And you guys have gone head to head with them in two bake-offs and won both. Now, there's, I'm sure, a lot of learnings for founders that would find themselves in similar situations. So walk us through what that was like. Give us a sense of the process. What did you guys do that gave you that edge to help you win?
We don't care about competitors. I'll just go out and say it, right? Like, we don't care. I think when you're building a company, two things matter. One, you have to earn the right to serve a customer. And what that means is you have to have depth of thought. You have to be able to understand their problem better than they do. And two, you have to show them that you understand the problem better than anyone else in the world does. So we don't care about competitors. We don't think about them. It is also true that if you go into any AI vertical or you're building any company now, you will see 25 competitors. We are very, very sharp and focused on understanding what the problem of the customer in front of us is, and we will earn that right to be there and to serve them. I think once you flip that question a little bit, then the burden becomes on us to make sure we understand the problem better than anybody else in the world. We're more than happy to lose to competitors if we believe that the competitor can solve a problem better than we can.
And was there a specific instance?
We don't care, right? Like we just want to solve the problem. If somebody else can solve the problem better than us, they've earned the right to be there, and we're happy.
And if you guys are not doing this sort of, we're going to be 20% cheaper than the competitor and then kind of wiggle your way in, if the approach is sort of focus on the customer, focus on the problem, if you think back to maybe one or two of those instances, was there something specific or something tangible in that sales motion, a moment that kind of flipped things in your favor?
The interesting part here is we're not from a sales background, so we wouldn't know what the sales motion should have looked like, in all honesty. But to answer your question directly, one, can you go essentially mano a mano and say, hey, like, let's try both the platforms out right now and let's see, like, you tell me who's better, right? That's one way of proving it. Two, most vendors or AI vendors in healthcare have been selling vaporware. Right, people have been saying, "Hey, AI, we're at this percent accuracy. We do this and all of these fancy things." I think it's one very important that customers can understand what went through behind building a product like this, and they want to know that. Especially this year, we get a lot more questions than we used to because people are a lot more educated. And two, like, they want to see it on their documents. They want to understand that you understand their rule sets, for example, or you understand how their workflows work. So our quote unquote sales motion is very visual. Like, we just literally just go show the product and say, hey, we're happy to sign a business associate agreement with you. Why don't you run your documents live in front of us? And let's see where the models went well. Let's see where they didn't go well. If they didn't go well, why did they not go well, and how will we improve on this? Right, that's what customers want to see, because then you become a thoughtful provider, and then you can talk about change management. Then you can talk about how do we do something like this for you? Because the value of the platform is just immense.
I also want to touch on that second part. Like, once you get in, I think you guys started selling 12 months ago. One of your earliest customers then was, I think they started at 100K and they're at 500K now, which is again a wild jump. So what's worked on that front? How are you guys growing within customers?
Yeah, we employ the forward. The joke we like to crack with our customers is we're 95% engineering, 5% sales, which means that there's a lot of really, really smart people who want to be in your office. They want to meet you every week. We want to understand your processes in depth so that we can go automate more. The idea of our platform is fairly simple, which is we might land with one thing. We might automate a very, very messy process. But how do you deploy your internal tools on code? How do you automate more every year and not less? Most healthcare IT companies in the last 20 to 25 years have been essentially squeezing a lot of these customers, right? How do you be different? How do you be authentic? Where you can actually increase your ROI with every passing year and every passing minute and not reduce it. How do we save you more time and more money, right? And that's kind of where sort of we came from it. A lot of it is because we're primarily engineering, which is, hey, an engineer wants to go solve more problems within your company. And if you have, for example, one of our customers was, you know, doing data entry into an EMR and also into a spreadsheet. One of our engineers figured that out and built like a spreadsheet automation tool where you don't have to do that anymore, right? Like, these are the kinds of things that sort of a messy reality of these customers looks like. And like, we want to be able to serve all of them so that we can save them more time. It just comes from a very simple thing, which is we want our ROI to increase every year. And then if you capture some of that value, customers are more than happy to pay you, right? It's less about how much people pay you, like 100 to 500K. That's not particularly useful. The question is, how do I get my ROI from 20 million to a 50 million ROI? And then if I capture $400,000 of that, that's like, okay, right? But as long as you keep that focus and maniacal focus on how do you solve that problem, like, typically you're in a good spot.
Let's switch.
We don't talk like enterprise comp. We're not thinking like ACV from like 100K to 600K. Like, we don't think about any of these things, right? And like, we don't want to capture, we might capture, instead of like thinking about how much we can capture for every customer, we think about how much more value we can create.
Let's switch gears a little bit on how you guys are building the company internally. And I know your thought process is like every single person in the company is a 10Xer, and it's a lean, mean fighting machine. And you're just not going to add people for the sake of adding people. Where does that ethos and process come from? And, you know, what kind of AI nativity does it take for each person to be that 10Xer?
Again, like, not to crack another joke about this, but like, I think it comes from like a deep, deep thing with Aniket and I don't like managing people. it just comes from like, we don't want to talk to more people. And every time you add another person, Aniket, you can probably answer this, but like, the number of meetings in the company just goes up. So, right? And like, we just talk, and like, every time you, I think the bigger risk for us is you hire someone subpar. Not to say that people are subpar in any way, but like, you add someone who doesn't fit our culture. And then everyone around them goes and like talks to them. Yeah, spends like 10 to 15 meetings per week trying to compensate for that person, right? It just comes from, hey, listen, we can do a lot more now with a lot of these tools. Every person sort of gets amplified in the company now that you have more tools. Which means that we want to have a lean company with who just every day just think about how do we solve this problem, right? And what that means is we hire a lot of ex-founders, we hire a lot of people we think are going to be founders someday in their own right and hopefully funded by you folks in the future. But like, if you hire a lot of those kinds of people, they will solve the problem on their own without you ever having to talk to them. So you just cut out on X number of meetings a week just by having the right people. So I think, yeah, we just want to be lean. We want to have elite technical talent and people who will build companies and solve problems on their own without ever having to talk to anybody else. So Aniket, do you have any thoughts here?
Aniket, before you answer that question, I also want to bring you in on just this FTE model. And I know you guys have used it in your own way. It's a pretty abused term because everybody has FTEs. But a lot of those FTEs just end up being more services. Whereas you've really tried to stay true to this concept of FTEs as your product guys within each of these companies. So just talk a little bit as you amplify on Ajay's answer, but just talk about the FTE model as well.
Right. As Ajay mentioned, FD model actually works best with ex-founders and people who want to become founders. Reason here is they want that high amount of ownership starting from not just engineering, but starting from understanding what the customer needs, thinking out how the product needs to be shaped for that, and then executing a very quick format of it, refining it right with the customer sitting in their office, and then also scaling it as they lock down a product concept with the customer. This is how we think about FD, because A, it's not like five engineers sitting and building out the product over weeks, and then we figure out the customer might not want it. You test fast, you break fast, but you validate fast. So that's the idea here. And we have features rolling out in like 2 to 3 days, bug fixes in like 1 hour, right in front of the customer, and they are super happy.
And to touch on your question on services, I think you can use forward deployed motion as a way to discover workflows. Instead of having traditional customer success, you have a very smart engineer or ex-founder or future founder who goes into each enterprise and says, hey, I want to be able to deliver X amount of ROI and automate Y percent of whatever this total process looks like. What is it going to take to actually do that? And every quarter we look at this, a forward deployed engineer would have launched 7 to 8 things, and we go ahead and fold that up into the platform. So a good way and proxy of thinking about this is every quarter for a particular type of feature, like how many times did we have to do forward deployed work? And if you're touching the same thing too many times, it probably means that you're getting into services. In our case, like we monitor in our roadmap, like, hey, how many times are we folding that back into the platform, making it a template in some sense, or making it part of our workflow builder with a connector, right? So that's how at least we try to not stray into the services sort of model.
So again, you know, I just want to flash some learnings for our listeners. This is what an AI native company at least looks like for me. Highly focused on the 10Xers, deploying a forward deployed motion in a very, very thoughtful, nuanced way, such that you're not getting sucked into building services for your customers. At the same time, being so responsive to your customers on bug fixes that they feel like that they're in a services environment, but it's actually not a services environment. And finally, you know, discovering these workflows, but then saying, hey, you know what, we're not just going to automate them, we're just going to do the work. So at least for us, that really connected on how you guys are building a truly AI native company. So all of this looks really good. And you know, you've had a lot of successes. But talk a little bit about what you learned from some of the failures. I remember there was one customer you guys sold, but couldn't actually deliver in time and you lost. But then that really focused you guys on into a different kind of energy. And then from then on, it's just been winning all the way. So talk a little bit also about the failures and what young founders can learn from that.
Yeah, I think the worst thing in the world is to let down a customer. I'll just go out and say it. It feels like death when someone sort of trusts you and you can't deliver that fully. I think it's just sometimes. By the way, when you're getting started, like all startups are terrible. Like that's just a conclusion I've come out to. Right? A lot of this is you will bite off more than you can chew. At any point in time. And I think you just have to plan for that effectively, right? You'll realize probably every sort of week or month, if you're moving fast enough like we are and growing that quickly, there will be probably one major problem every day, right? So I think from our point of view, it's just adapting a lot quicker and making that feedback cycle a lot faster with ourselves and with our customers, and then being super honest about like how well are we doing on that particular day, And typically, you'll sort of realize that you might suck, but you can if you improve maybe three things that day, you'll suck a little less. So,
I will say this candor that I receive when I ask these questions in board meeting is probably the best thing that founders can learn, which is that you just go at it very, very directly.
Guys, what's one metric you obsess over?
For me, it's everything has to be very well automated. You should not have gaps in automation.
Accuracy. Right now, the metric that I'm looking at is splitting accuracy. That's the thing I look at the most.
Yeah. And where is that at currently? And what are you guys trying to push it to?
99.1%. We're trying to make it like 99.5. I think that's the number we're trying to get to.
Nice. What does Coral look like in 3 years?
The next great process automation company.
Okay. And if you had to give advice to a founder looking to start in a niche vertical in the US market, what would that be?
Stop watching podcasts like this and start talking to some customers. Sorry. I mean, that's just the honest answer, right? Yeah. Like,
I'll end this off with the one last question on, you know, you guys are working at a breakneck pace. That's sort of the entire AI industry right now. What does that look like internally? Just making sense of product, GTM, and everyone's doing everything. So what does that look like? What are your plans for the next 12 months?
I guess I'm answering this rapid fire again. Yeah, we are growing at breakneck speeds. Just this quarter, I think we closed to 3x growth. We're just looking to continue that, honestly. That you can go solve the same problem for hundreds and hundreds of providers by the end of the year.
Awesome. Guys, thank you so much for doing this. Super excited about this investment. Both Ajay and Aniket have taught us so much about what an AI native startup looks like, and really looking forward to the journey ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're watching Z47 Moments, the podcast by India's oldest venture capital firm, Z47. If you like this episode, consider hitting the subscribe button and the bell icon so you never miss an update from Z47 Moments.